Line with us, we have Jamel Hill and Michael Smith of the His and Hers podcast on ESPN2. What's going on, guys?
What's good?
Yep, what's good with you guys?
Nothing much. Man, glad to have you guys back in the war room just to talk about a few pressing issues in the world of sports. That's a lot going on, and a lot of it is off the field, off the court. B. Austin, you want to get into that to that Ferguson / St. Louis Rams?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the whole country is kind of turned on its side with what's going on in the media with Ferguson, with some of the things in New York. And, of course, it has injected itself into the world of sports and more specifically the NFL. The Rams, St. Louis Rams wide receivers core decided in a show of solidarity and support for not only Michael Brown and his family, but just the entire movement that we're seeing in the country, decided to come out during their announcements for walking onto the field with the hands up, don't shoot, going on. And I, of course, I applauded it. I was loving it. What's your take on what they did in a time and place where we don't see athletes take a social stand very often? And then also, I'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of the country's mixed response, and, you know, the St. Louis Police Department kind of got involved. Guys, what's your take?
Jamel?
I'll go first on this one. I think for me, much like you, I was encouraged and delighted by the fact that they chose this platform and this time to take a stand on obviously a very divisive issue. And that's the thing about it. It's like whenever athletes take stands, I think we pick and choose when we want them to use that platform. And I think how we feel about whether or not they use a platform for social issues is determined by whether or not we agree or disagree with their stance on that particular issue. And this wasn't one of those easy, not so complicated issues that they could lend their voice to. This was something that a lot of people have been debating and discussing. Obviously, anything along racial lines is going to be viewed and seen differently. And for them to do this, I thought it really showed, just kind of how much it struck them, as it would. I mean, they're black male athletes, clearly African Americans, particularly African-American men and their relationship with law enforcement. There's a lot of longstanding racial tension, a lot of longstanding racism, period. And so I was encouraged by what they did, very much so. And I thought the response to it from the St. Louis County Police was preposterous. And to me, if they're a community that's intent on healing, that was kind of some major evidence that maybe everybody isn't on that same page.
Yeah, guys, we just got finished doing the His and Hers TV show on E2, and we are about to do our His and Hers podcast, and we're done. And this is very similar, if not exactly, what we're going to be addressing on this podcast. And one of the things, very few things piss me off at this point as I, reach my mid-30s. One of the things that gets on my nerves, Jamel and I worked real hard to get a TV show. And I can't stand people telling me how to run my TV show. And there's a lot of people, we get this response all the time on Twitter, stick to sports. That's what they say, stick to sports. We discuss Ferguson on the show, they say stick to sports. And the problem is, in America, we love our sports to be a distraction from reality. When people tune in on Sundays to the Red Zone channel and to watch their favorite teams, they don't want to hear about the realities of the world. They don't want to hear about what's going on, with Mike Brown. They don't want to, they want to just focus on a fantasy football team. They want to escape. But the problem is, man, and the reality is, we can't escape this. And that's why things are so slow to change, because as a nation, we got a very short attention span. It's like it's on CNN for a second, and it's on MSNBC for a second, and then it goes away. But it just feels like this is a sea change. Like Mike Brown, Eric Garner, this is not going away. It feels like we're at a tipping point. It feels that way. And I think the reason why people got so upset with those Rams players, for the same reason that they got upset, I think it was a Monday Night Football game. It was a bad game, but there were protesters at the game on Monday Night Football that you could hear during the broadcast. Or even when the St. Louis Cardinals were in the playoffs, there were protesters protesting, you know, outside the Cardinals games. It's an inconvenience, but too bad, because we don't get to take a break from being black. This is our everyday reality. And the thing I appreciated about those players, and Jamel talks about this all the time, it's easy to make a statement, and she just alluded to it, it's easy to make a statement when it's convenient, when everybody's, you know, patting you on the back and saying, yeah, you're right, we all agree. These cats knew that what they were doing was not, you know, universally accepted or universally supported. And yet they went out and they did something that they probably knew would invite some kind of criticism. Maybe not to the level of the police association, but they knew it probably would invite criticism, but they showed a lot of courage to do it. And that's what I liked about it, because they stepped out and said, you know what, we are black men, first and foremost. We might be St. Louis Rams, you know, during the week or from 1 to 3 on Sundays, but we are black men and we have sons who are growing up in this world. And we have to show support for something that's bigger than us. And so as a country, and as a media, we can't, you know, let our attention shift and just move on and say, all right, well, and that's the thing, that it was clear the police associations, that arrogant, threatening letter they released, yeah, it was crystal clear that they were looking at it like, you know what, read the grand jury testimony. He was exonerated. Like, we don't know the difference between exonerated and you didn't press charges. Well, he was exonerated. Open and shut case. A lot of people want this to be an open and shut case. Like, the process ran its course. They didn't indict. What more do you want? Justice. You know, and to take a break from that and to feel like, oh, I just want to watch football, or I just want to watch His and Hers, or I just want to watch ESPN, I want to watch y'all talk sports, stick to sports, damn that. Like, this is important, and this isn't going anywhere. So, I couldn't be prouder of the Rams players for what they did, and they had better not be forced to apologize.
Yeah,
you mentioned it being a tipping point, because I thought about that as well, like, you know, word to Malcolm Gladwell. But, you know, I saw you posted that link from the restaurant in St. Louis, who said they're no longer showing Rams games and all the vitriol things going into St. Louis. Some of that's like shocking. With how the police came out, as well as like some of the community, it's like shocking to me.
It was stark. I mean, and what you're alluding to is the sports bar that said that they would no longer be showing Rams games. Good luck surviving as a sports bar not showing the local team, by the way. But that they would no longer be showing Rams games because of what those players did. And, you know, they faced a lot of criticism from people in the league, outside of the league, who feel like it was inappropriate on some level for them to do that. But the way I look at it is, sports, throughout the history of it, it's always been a great place for those things to happen. Where would we be if not for John Carlos and Tommy Smith and other displays that we've seen without the graciousness of Jackie Robinson? A lot of times sports was far ahead of the rest of the country, and for that matter, the world, when it came Absolutely. To integration and dealing with racism and dealing with tougher social issues, because the one thing sports had going for it is that this was the run arena where, regardless of what your skin color was, what your background was, what your finances were, at some point on the field, you got to prove yourself. At some point, talent is going to win out. And regardless of the stumbling blocks there may be, there's going to be that moment of truth. And in society, it's not always like that. And that's why sports is always the perfect haven for that to happen. Not to mention, it's where, regardless of what was happening on the outside world, African Americans could find some level of financial and social prominence. So I think that what we've seen, as Mike alluded to, is that we're all good with athletes talking and athletes speaking up and them lending their cause, lending their voice to a cause until they say something we don't disagree with, which is why a couple years ago when Tim Tebow had that Super Bowl ad, you know, that was a pro-life ad, a controversial ad to do, that's why I applauded him for it. I may not necessarily agree with those same politics, but the point is that that's something that's going to divide people. And he felt so strong about how he felt about that issue that he put himself in a commercial with his mother, knowing very well the kind of brushback he may get back and some people that may not want to deal with him because of that. And that's kind of the spirit of what we've seen of some of our greatest athletes, people who are willing to sacrifice perhaps money out of their own pocket, maybe a little bit of social standing, to stand up for something they believe in.
Right. Now, that's the same thing with people, what Michael just said. You know, people always want to tell us when we're engaging with our, you know, our followers on social media, they want to tell us, you know, stick to sports and this and that. But, you know, people don't realize that, you know, we're human beings. Like Mike said, we're definitely black men. a lot of this stuff affects us too. And just because we do sports for a living, it doesn't mean that this stuff doesn't affect us. Doesn't mean that we don't want to talk about it. And whatever platform we have to talk about it, that's where, you know, where the conversation is going to take place. But people really don't like things interfering with their sports. It's crazy.
Well, I you know, it's funny because I I looked at all of this, and Michael, you brought up the point of it being a tipping point, and it feels that way to me as well. I think initially when the verdict was announced or read, I felt deep sadness. Mm-hmm. I felt hurt because I have two children. You know, I got two children, and I'm thinking about the world they're growing up in, and I know you have kids as well. But now, as I look at kind of the movement that's behind this, I'm kind of getting excited. Like, I'm kind of happy that things are where they are, and I'm thinking that people such as yourselves and those athletes, those Rams players that took that stand, and let's be clear, taking a stand is when you put something on the line. When you're risking mm-hmm. something. And I appreciated the fact that they are risking something. It's not about wearing a hoodie and throwing it up on social media. It's not about doing clever things that people will applaud for a second and it'll go away. They took a stand because there's a risk to them. So mm-hmm. I feel as though we are at a tipping point. And where else, let's face it, even in 2014, what other medium or platform outside of sports and entertainment do Black people have? Like, where else would they expect for this to come from outside of venues that have traditionally been ours, quote unquote? So, you know, the expectation that this would just go quietly off into the night, I think is ludicrous. And we know that there are some divisive forces out there that even put pressure on you guys as members of the media to not mix social issues and sports.
On the flip side, we have a responsibility and an obligation to do it, and we understand that. It's like, look, Jamal, we both know what we signed up for, and you're going to have people. I mean, like I talked about the negative, but I mean, the response that we get and the support that we get when we do address these issues, either on social media or on ESPN2, is way more than, you know, the people who say stick to sports, nobody cares what you think, you know, this, that, and the other. And even the ones that say stick to sports or decide to call us racist or argue with us, the good news is they're still watching. And in certain minds, you're just not going to change. But we understand that, you know, it would be more of a problem if we didn't address it than dealing with the backlash for addressing it. Like, we have to do it. Like, you know, we have these platforms for a reason, and it's not just to talk about trivial things. And, you know, neither one of us is acting like we are, you know, single-handedly or joining forces to change the world every day from noon to one on ESPN2. By all means, no. But if enough voices continue to drive the conversation and continue to keep these things at the forefront, maybe there could be change. I'm also hopeful, too, you know, in terms of the future, because we're living in a different time. I mean, you know, social media has its, you know, downside, but the upside is also far greater because you don't have to rely on the mainstream media that's more often than not controlled, if not all the time, controlled by the majority. Like, we can be our own media. Like, the amount of, you know, the national moment of silence, everything that was coordinated through social media and has been coordinated through social media, you know, and the information that's being shared in real time has been amazing. Like, people around the country were able to watch not just the CNN and MSNBC and whatnot feeds of the protests in Ferguson in the immediate aftermath back in the summer. We were able to watch it on social media all night, so often better feeds, and get the real information from the ground. So technology has given a different kind of life, you know, to the current situation than maybe our parents and grandparents had, in terms of just being able to communicate, being able to share information, being able to join forces, being able to keep the conversation going. I mean, my goodness, hashtags help change things nowadays, or at least help bring awareness to things, I should say. So it's I got kids too, man. I got sons and daughters. I don't know what to tell my son or how to explain it to him. But hopefully, you know, a different explanation will be required the more, you know, things hopefully change for the better. There's reason for optimism, but look, going back to social media, when you see a brother get choked out and it's on video and you hear him saying, I can't breathe, and he's not indicted, and an officer's not indicted at least. Jamel and I were talking about this the other night. You know, back in the day, we get upset over an acquittal. Now it's like, can we at least get to the trial? Can we at least get that far? You know, so you can have video, and we talk about body cameras, you can have video, and it's still not received justice. So it's not the end-all, be-all, but at least it allows people not to be at the mercy of just the mainstream media to deliver a message.
All right. Well, before we switch gears, I wasn't even going to ask you guys about this, but everybody and their mother is writing Charles Barkley an open letter, Etan Thomas, even Kenny Smith, who sits right next to him every other night. Brief, we'll you know, talk about this briefly. What are your guys' reaction to, you know, what he had to say about the whole thing?
I wasn't really focused necessarily on, I mean, I was focused on what he had to say. Obviously, I read it, and I thought it was interesting. I guess what I'm very curious about more so is, will they address it on TNT? Because I would have thought in some ways that would have been a better forum. It just seemed kind of odd to write a letter to somebody that's your coworker. Could y'all not have talked about it maybe face-to-face? And I got the line when he said sometimes things get, like, lost in conversation. And nor am I saying that, you know, Kenny Smith was somehow inappropriate by addressing it this way. I thought he had some interesting points in there. And did I agree with what Charles Barkley had to say? No, I did not agree with what he had to say. That's his perspective, and he's allowed his right to his opinion. He's also allowed the right to be wrong, and Charles is my boy, and I tell him that to his face. So I just wondered, I just thought I was more concentrated on the oddness of the response, if anything.
Right. Well, for me, I'm thinking Kenny probably did it this way. And this is going to sound like a diss, but it's not really a diss because I like both of those guys. But they aren't the most articulate brothers in the world, so maybe he figured the conversation on television might not go the way that they wanted to. That's just my thought.
Well, you know how I read the letter. Okay, going back to what I said earlier, basically Kenny told Charles, stick to sports. That's what he was telling him.
Exactly.
He was like, stay in your lane, boss. He was like, that's basically what he told him.
He tried to use the Obama and the Al Sharpton, he tried to use that analogy to basically tell him that, stick to sports.
Yeah, I think that's the new wave now. So now when I disagree with B. Austin, I'm just going to write him an open letter as opposed to talking about it on the show.
Right.
Well, y'all gonna have a lot of
people are surprised. I think people are surprised at the position Charles took with this, being that he's from Alabama, the time he grew up in, the things that he's faced in his life. But what I've shared in the conversations I've had about that letter was merely, don't think that because a black man comes through a storm that he doesn't adopt some of the feelings and beliefs of those that bumped him on the head and may have oppressed him. I mean, don't think Stockholm syndrome. I mean, that's all.
Everybody's entitled to an opinion. I mean, he had his. A lot of us don't agree with it, but whatever. But let's switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about the Ray Rice, or now the Janae Rice situation. Now it's good that we have you on, Jamel, because you're actually one of the mediums that she opened up to. You did a nice little sit down interview with her. The first thing I want to know, what was Janae Rice trying to accomplish, you know, by having this sit down with you? Like, what was the point? What was she trying to tell us? Was it just that I'm letting you know that I'm behind, you know, Ray 100%? Or was there something about that night that we were supposed to, like a light bulb was supposed to go off in our head and change some of our feelings? Because we actually had some people say that to us, like posting it, you know, your interview on our page saying, you know, see, this proves something, but we really didn't get what that person was trying to say. So what was the point of the whole thing?
Well, I think for her, and much like with any celebrity or anybody of note that winds up on the wrong side of the headlines, there's going to kind of come a point where you're just going to have to face the questions, face the media, face the public, so to speak. And they have arrived at that point. At the time of the interview, it was, I think, the first day that there was testimony in the Ray Rice appeals case. So clearly they were speeding some towards some kind of conclusion, whether it be him having been reinstated like he was, or it could have gone the other way, and maybe he wasn't, and the indefinite suspension held up. Either way, at some point, they were going to have to talk. And so I think because the legal conclusion was nearing an end, that gave her, that was part of the incentive. I think what you just said was another part of it, wanting to express support for her husband, also wanting to maybe clear up some things that happened that night. And I think it's up to probably the, you know, reader or viewer, depending on whether you read my interview with her or whether you watched the Matt Lauer interview. I mean, you're going to walk away, whatever your opinion was. I'm not sure. Maybe she might have given people more insight into who she was in particular, but I'm not sure if your opinion was one way or the other, right. If it was really moved that much. And so, and I told her that, you know, when the process started, is like, this may be one of those things where, yeah, you get to certainly tell your side of things, but don't go into it with the false notion that you telling your side is going to get everybody on board.
Right. Because I've had conversations where some, you know, like Ray Rice defenders were basically trying to tell me that her point in this whole thing was to prove to us that, you know, she played a role in making him do what he did that night. And, you know, even through what you, you know, from what you got out of her, I still don't see that, because the only thing I saw from her was, okay, he spit on me and I tried to slap him, which to me is like human nature, because I think spitting on somebody is actually the worst thing you could possibly do. Like, I'd rather you punch me in my face than spit on me, but that's just me. It might just be me. So I was just trying to get that from you, Jamal. I didn't really understand what she was trying to get across.
I think how we feel about this is so tied. It's tied deeply to our personal beliefs. I've always been of the opinion that there's certain groups that if there are anything done to those particular groups, it just resonates emotionally much different in all of us. It's women, children, and animals. All right? If you have been are a victim in any of those three categories, I think it definitely resonates differently with the public. I don't think that if you went into this thinking that she wasn't at fault, I don't find that this her explanation is going to move you any differently. And I don't know if some people call it rationalizing or justifying or making excuses for whatever category you want to put that in. This was just simply, you know, her explanation. Like probably a lot of people, no, I don't find her at fault at all. And I did understand on some small level what she was apologizing for when I asked her whether or not why she felt like she should have apologized to Ray Rice at all, because privately she did. And her explanation was simply that she felt like the situation, how she handled herself, was so out of character and how unlike she carries herself, that she felt like that was something that was worth an apology for.
I can see that, and I can respect her, I guess, being a genteel woman and trying to, I guess, you know, as a good book reads, a kind word in the face of rage turns that rage away. Some of the conversations we've had are very disheartening in our own communities, where people are justifying the fact that he whooped her ass. Like, there's just no way around it. Like, this is the mother of his children and his wife, and he whooped her ass. Like, that's a great, great piece, great interview. But like you say, that's not going to change the fact. That's not going to change that film that we've seen. And it's probably not going to change many opinions. We're just a little bit more informed. Michael, what was your take on all of this?
Well, I wasn't, the least bit surprised that Janae felt comfortable with my colleague to be able to open up and share what she did. So, I was happy that it turned out well. And I I respect Jamel enough to accept her representation on a lot of things. And she kept me in the loop, you know, when the process was going on, and told me what she thought about her and told me how impressive she was. And that certainly came through in the interview. I think it was more of a display of strength than weakness. You know, I think a lot of people throughout this entire process at various times have tried to psychoanalyze her from afar and tried to, you know, lump her in with other domestic violence victims and assume that she's, you know, simply excusing her abuser or doing what victims typically do. You mentioned the Stockholm syndrome. And I think we have to step back, and instead of projecting our thoughts, feelings, experiences onto her life, simply realize that, look, you know, she's the only one that has to walk in her shoes. She's the only person that has to deal with the situation, and how she chooses to do it, she doesn't need our collective judgment as much as she needs our collective support. We can think what we want about Ray Rice. Ultimately, his ultimate judge is God, his wife, his daughter, their family. And I thought the most powerful image was, you know, both in terms of a still photograph and on a Today show, was seeing her mother next to her talk about how she was raised. You know, a lot of people could look at that and say that's bull or they're full of it or that's fine, go ahead and judge. But ultimately, like, this is her husband. This is the man that she loves, that she's married to. And if she decides to forgive him, move on, maintain their marriage for whatever reason, you know, I loved it that they've said, hey, I don't need him for the money. That's great. So if you're in love with him, or you're in love with, you know, you want to continue your family, you want to stay together for their daughter, whatever the reason is, I think we got to respect it. We don't have to agree with it, but I think we have to respect it, as opposed to trying to, you know, extrapolate and say, well, that just proves, you know, on one extreme that she was at fault, which, as you said, is complete and utter bullshit, or on the other extreme, you know, that she's a typical victim and she doesn't know any better. Like, that's her decision. Respect it. If she chooses to move on, the least we could do is at least be neutral on it. You don't have to, like, applaud it, but respect it. She's a grown woman. This is their marriage. We don't have to sleep with Ray Rice. We don't have to look that daughter in the face. That's on them. So it did a lot for me to hear from her. I think she's the most important voice in this entire situation. I don't care what Roger Goodell thinks at this point. I don't even need to hear from Ray Rice. There's not a whole lot Ray Rice can say. There's nothing he can say to make me change my mind about what he did. There's not a whole lot that he needs to say to make me change my mind about who he is as a person. I don't care. What I care most about is what does Janae think of Ray Rice moving forward? And if she's comfortable, I support her.
Cool. All right. So, and also, just, you know, before we move on to our final topic, the Ravens, of course, have released a statement saying that what she told Jamel and what she told Matt Lauer about the team basically giving her a script of what to say in a press conference, they're disputing what she actually told you guys. They put out a statement basically saying, after Ray informed the Ravens that Janae wanted also to speak at the event, I asked Ray on two different days if Ray wanted me to speak with Janae in advance of the press session. Both times Ray declined and said, she's good. She knows what she wants to say. At no time prior to the May 23rd session did we provide talking points, a script, or suggested script to Janae, or speak with her about the press event. We did not recommend or suggest to Ray or Janae that she apologize in any way. That's from Senior Vice President of Public Relations, Kevin Byrne. So he's basically saying, you know, she told you, Jamel, that the Ravens asked her to apologize for her role in that first press conference, and they're disputing that claim. So, you know, we got some more drama in this whole situation.
Can I just jump in and say one thing real quick? Like, I don't know who or what to believe at this point, but I think if you're going to measure credibility, Janae's probably got more than the Ravens at this point, no?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and not to mention, they certainly weren't shy about tweeting out that she apologized. Because that tweet was so tone deaf, that's why they just lost all credibility with me. I mean, you're live tweeting that kind of press conference, number one, and then you're going to make sure you live tweet that she apologized for her role in this. So, I mean, I guess it is what it is. You know, they have differing interpretations of who was told what and when, but certainly I think the Ravens can at least admit that from the time this happened, their entire mission was to try to repair and rehabilitate Ray Rice's image as quickly as possible so he can get back on the football field.
Okay. So last thing, because we don't want to keep you guys all day. We know you got things to do. Let's talk a little bit about the Adrian Peterson situation. We're going to stay in the NFL with more NFL off-the-field stuff. As we know, Adrian Peterson's appeal hearings have been going on this week. Jamel, what are your thoughts on these hearings? Like, do you think he should be reinstated, and do you think he will be reinstated prior to the end of this season?
Much like Ray Rice, I thought they both deserved a opportunity to play in the NFL. The truth of the matter is that there have been plenty of players who have not been model citizens, who have been convicted of crimes, who have resumed an NFL career. Michael Vick, Dante Stallworth, Josh Brent now with the Cowboys. So as much as anybody may disagree or be abhorred by some of the things that they've been accused of or in that matter have been proven to have done, I don't think that should necessarily cost them their opportunity, provided, of course, they still, much like any job, they're still able to contribute and produce. Now, there are reports that Adrian Peterson, or that the judge in that particular case, has encouraged both the NFL and Adrian Peterson's advisors to come up with some kind of settlement. I thought Ray Rice had a really good opportunity to win his appeal, because the only thing that changed for the commissioner was, and for that matter, the Ravens, was the presence of video. And much like was pointed out in the story that I did with Janae, is that they had no incentive to lie to the commissioner, because why would you do that knowing that there is a video that's out there? Well, Adrian Peterson is a little bit different. They seem to be hinging their case on the fact that Troy Vincent has told them that, or told Adrian Peterson at some point, that he would be getting credit for time served.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. Being that he had missed, you know, 9 or 10 weeks. Right, yeah. And I'm sorry, I don't know if Troy Vincent meets the threshold of NFL brass, that if he tells you that you automatically are to believe and extrapolate that means Roger Goodell, that's his intention as well. Okay, fine. So my expectation is that this will pretty much, as it has been so far, a lost year for Adrian Peterson. I think he actually will be back with the Vikings, because we got to remember, through all of this, through as much as we want to talk about the social impact of domestic violence, about how you raise your children and how you discipline your children, the NFL is still a bottom-line, talent-based, production-based business. And at the end of the day, that's what matters.
All right. Hey, Mike, I heard you guys probably about a week ago talking about this situation with Mike and Mike. Well, it was just one Mike, because I think Golden wasn't there that day. We get a lot of this. We get people basically telling us, well, you know, he sat home for such amount of games and he got paid at the same time. So a lot of people are trying to say, you know, you got to pay vacation, so you shouldn't be complaining about it. But something that you said that day, you know, that resonated with me, the fact that Adrian Peterson, you know, is trying really hard for, you know, Emmitt Smith's record. And I think that's really important to him, as you guys were talking about. Do you think in the bigger scheme of things, that's more important to him than the actual money? Because people want to keep harping on this paid vacation thing, but he just lost a lot of time in trying to go after a very prestigious record. What's your thought on that?
I'm gonna go out on the limb, because it's not my money. But because I don't, you know, he does have a lot of children. I'm sure he's got a lot of expenses. But so I don't want to make any assumptions. But along those lines, I would guess, if you asked Adrian Peterson, would you rather pay the salary in a fine and play and have those 9 games or this season back, or would you rather get paid and miss the season the way he has? I'm pretty close to guaranteeing he'd take the games and give up the money. Because, I mean, if you look at the way this guy has worked over the course of his career, how important football has been to him, how rigorously he rehabbed from the ACL to come back and win the MVP. I think playing football in general and playing it at a high level, an all-time level, was most important to him. So, yeah, I did think that the number of games that he missed initially was sufficient. I thought he should have gotten credit for it, and they should have just maybe took some money back and let him play. Because it just felt like – this was more of a statement by the commissioner than a necessity, because eventually, to Jamel's point, he's going to be reinstated. They're not going to keep him out of the league forever. So once he's reinstated, he still will have committed the act that he did toward his four-year-old son. People still will view him a certain way. I don't think anybody's mind is going to be changed about what he did, no more than people's minds are changed about what Michael Vick did or Dante Stallworth did. Now, if it's about rehabilitation and helping him be a better parent, you can do that without taking more games from him. You could have worked together to ensure that he, didn't go this far again with any of his children and learn from his mistake. Ironically, we're talking about a parent going too far and being too heavy-handed with a child, and now here's Roger Goodell, the commissioner, basically being too heavy-handed with the player. As somebody who has children, there comes a point of diminishing returns when it comes to punishment. Like, you can beat, you can punish, you could take away, you could do all sorts of things. At a certain point, if it's not getting through to them, then you're just punishing them just to punish them. They're not receiving the message. So it felt like he was simply adding on so that he would never be accused of being too soft again the way he was with Ray Rice. Let me pile on. Let me make a statement. This is not tolerated. I got a new domestic violence policy. There's a new sheriff in town. I'm going to be even tougher than I was before. But what are you really doing? You don't think he's learned his lesson? I mean, apparently, the legal system has prohibited him from spanking his children again. Like, so he has every incentive to walk the straight and narrow. You're not going to change his mind any further by taking away an additional 6-7 games.
Right.
I think that this particular case is very interesting, because it deals with something that, as parents, and I think as parents, just as human beings, I grew up in a household where ass whoopings occurred.
I thought you said you wanted to keep this within 2 hours, because if you start talking about corporal punishment, we're gonna be here for a minute. but go ahead. Go ahead.
And that's exactly where I was going, because Devin made one of the most profound points out of anybody that I've heard talk about this, where corporal punishment comes from. And so for me, even pointing the finger at Adrian, it's kind of like you have to be very careful with that, because I think more people from his generation and earlier than not got their butts whooped. So I didn't see any evidence of him really being abusive in any other fashion than taking it too far. So I kind of felt like there could be a little bit of hypocrisy in what Goodell was doing, because Goodell, we don't know your background, but you trying to tell me you didn't get spanked? Really? We all got spanked. That was kind of my take.
I'm gonna lay out on that and be quiet, because I could talk for the next 50 minutes about that, as Jamel knows. but well said. Let's just say that. Well said.
All right. So yeah, I mean, it's a lot of things going on in sports that that just isn't happening within the games. And we talked about it earlier. For everybody out there who's gonna tell us after you listen to this to stick to sports, and sports is just a part of real life. And what Jimmy always says, sports is a microcosm of real life. So, things are going to, seep its way into sports. And we just want to thank you guys again for having these conversations with us, and taking the time out to do so. Let everybody know, before we get you out of here, how they can listen to the podcast, where they can watch the show again. Do your commercial.
Jay?
It's pretty simple. We're on noon weekdays on ESPN2. Finally got the show changed, so now we're all the name of the show changed, so now it's all one brand. So it's the His and Hers TV show and the His and Hers podcast, which I guess what's the disclaimer, Mike, when we do one, it's twice a week.
Yeah, right.
Most weeks we try to make sure it's twice a week, which you can download on ESPN.com. ESPN, what is it, ESPN.com?
ESPN.com/PodCenter.
That's PodCenter. That's what it is. All right. You would think I've said that 1,000 times. I would remember it. So at any rate, so there's plenty of ways to find us. And obviously Mike and I are both on Twitter under our real names. Yes, he is under Michael Smith. He owns the name on Twitter, despite the fact this world is populated with 7,000 or 7 million Michael Smith. There's only one that's verified. It's that one. And, of course, you can find us also on Instagram. Hey, Mike, he's a heavyweight around here. Y'all just don't know.
Yeah. I was like, how did you find that? It's like
no, somebody was just squatting on it. Somebody was squatting on it. Like somebody was squatting on Michael Smith. And like, we just, you know, called Twitter and was like, hey, can we have it? And they were like, God, yeah. And that was it.
Mike is calling Twitter.
Well, I didn't call him. I didn't call him. We got people here at ESPN that do that for us, thankfully. So, but I don't have that. I don't have that kind of pull on Instagram. I'm the Michael Smith on Instagram. But I'm boring on Instagram. The Thirst Trap Queen Jamel Hill is who you want to follow on Instagram. That's
who, Thirst Trap Queen.
Hey, but definitely, congrats to you guys for getting the TV show changed over to one unified brand. Because, you know, I always, you know, when we talk to you guys, I always tell Mike anyway that numbers do lie. So,
we knew that. Now that it's been changed, we could come clean. We knew that. We just couldn't say it every day.
All right. So, thank you guys again for coming on. And, of course, you know, we got to do this again sometime soon.
For sure.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, all right, guys. Y'all take it easy.